topic of discussion today, as you'll notice, deals not with the preparation of new staff, but rather with the development of the contact staff and the area reps, the men and the women in the state director's present responsibility. And in our presentation this morning and also in our discussion, what I'm praying for and what we'll hope to accomplish is to highlight the significance of the state director's responsibility in developing his staff, and also to determine some specific areas and goals, some content in developing these contact staffs and air reps. And I hope that we'll leave with some ideas of actions we can take to implement for staff development. So firstly, the significance of staff development. I copied these to expedite the taking of notes, because some of these things are some quotes here. And if you'll follow along with me. But first, if we go back to Jack's verse that first evening, or that first morning, Acts 20:28, that our responsibility for developing staff is rooted in our scriptural responsibility as spiritual leaders. Take heed to feed the flock of God. To feed. And 1 Peter 5, not 23 like the sheet says, but 1 Peter 5, 2. And it goes on to verse 3, as you remember. But Peter's word, tend or feed the flock of God, which is among you. One of the things that impressed me as I read, in reading through Jeremiah and Ezekiel, is that God really takes notice of whether or not his shepherds, the people that he have put to shepherd his people, are feeding them. And he takes a note of that. And you remember that verse that Jack shared from Ezekiel 34, that God noticed they were not feeding the sheep. You remember what the word says of David in Psalm 78, verse 72, so he guided them, he fed them according to the integrity of his heart, and guided them by the skillfulness of his hand. Now, staff development is invaluable to our staff, to our ministry, and to our organization. And let me go to that book that we read or should have read for our last year's time together. You remember that book that we never did get around to discussing, The Making of a Christian Leader by Ted Engstrom? And three thoughts here. The death knell of any organization is to defy the need for raising the skill level of its people. That's quite sobering. The death knell of any organization is to defy the need for raising the skill level of its people. Then he makes a statement, training is a vital part of organizing. Every good leader knows that training leads to competence, and without it, no organization can flourish. The investment of time and money pay rich dividends, for no one is immune from learning more about his work, responsibilities, and abilities. We spent a lot of money to come here this week. A lot of time, and I'd hate to think of, I'd hate to hear what the figure would be what that Jerry has for all the travel cost. But it will be worth it. If we learn more about our work, about our responsibilities, about our abilities, our organization can flourish. Then he makes a statement, and it really is, there's more to this paragraph, in fact about three paragraphs, that if you get into the book on page 152, you can read it further. But Engstrom said that after selection or staffing, a key task of the leader is to help people improve their knowledge, attitude, and skills. Then he says, even when jobs are occupied by people who have the aptitudes and ability to perform, you should give attention to improvement. The development of concepts and new techniques in a given field increases with the development of people, and this alone is significant. I believe that the most successful leaders, he says, place personal development among their highest priorities. But this whole idea that the improvement of people leads to the development of concepts and new techniques. And I think how about 10 years ago, Larry Whitehouse in the Midwest, under Jack's leadership, pioneered the concept for us of the training centers. And then Al Andrews, after Larry took over Urbana, and then Bill Tell. And with each person, as they have been developed and then taken it over, we have gained and we have developed new thoughts and new things and new concepts that we have learned through it. But it has come with a development of these people. It's been encouraging to me that as I have talked with young men who want to join our staff, that one of the reasons they usually share with me for their wanting to serve Jesus Christ with the NAVs is that they notice, they say, the NAVs develop their people. And that's a good reputation to have. But I think that we ought to be cautious, because it's very easy to neglect the proper development of our staff. And I think of three reasons why it's easy to neglect it. And one is that it costs time away from the ministry. On a regular basis, whether it's a day-by-day basis, we know it, the guy could be out there seeing more people, doing more evangelism. And it's a whole lot easier, more tempting to do that. You can measure that easier. I witnessed to three people today, then you can see the fruits of spending an hour in prayer or spending an hour in study. I was greatly challenged in reading an interview that Billy Graham had with Christianity Today, and I think it was last August or September's issue. And one of the questions they asked him was, if you had your life to live over, what would you do differently? And his answer was, I would study more and preach less. Another reason is it means extra preparation and planning by you and me, the supervisor. And so it's easier to let it slip by. And then a more, perhaps a common one, is we tend to assume that when people become staff, they don't need further help. They're now air reps, they're now contact staff. They're quite capable of helping themselves, and they can figure these things out. They'll develop themselves. Edith Schaefer in Witness Stand, I think that's the article she wrote in Christianity Today. I like reading those things. She's just so down-to-earth, common sense. But she had one of those articles she wrote on, we're all novices. And in reading it, I realized just how true it is. So often I'm inclined to say to my child, you're 11 years old, act your age. And one of the things that she brings out in it is, you know, nobody's ever been that age before. I've never been 38 years old before until recently. And so you'll have to forgive me if I don't act 38. Whatever a 38-year-old person is supposed to do, I'll have to learn that. But you know, our staff are always entering into new experiences, new responsibilities. Whether that is the fact that they have now developed a disciple maker. That's a new thing. Or someone is going to graduate. What do you do with that person? They've never had children before. Or maybe if they've had children, they've never had a 13-year-old before. What do you do with a 13-year-old? So, in a real sense, we're all novices. And we are continually entering into experiences and into responsibilities for which we need development. Now, one of the dangers of development and staff development is to call anything that it leads to the increase of knowledge development. I think that we need to think in terms of what should be the aim of staff development. And I'd like to suggest that we restrict our thinking to the aim of staff development should be to increase the effectiveness, the confidence, and the capacity of our staff? Will it do that by increasing their proficiency and competence in their responsibilities? So that it's not the fact that we're reading or the fact that we're attending this seminar or that seminar, but is it making us more effective in our responsibilities? Now, competence has to do, of course, with meeting the requisite or adequate ability or qualities, whereas proficiency having to do with your expertise, your abilities, being advanced in an art or an occupation. And we need to develop these two areas. We need to remember that staff development is progress-oriented, not problem-centered. And so that is a happy thought about it. We're thinking, now, what is the next step? Not what is the next problem we need to work on. And one of the thoughts that I've heard Lauren share before in the whole area of pace setting, and I think is very relevant here, is that this idea of staff development is concerned with helping the staff or a staff do his best in their God-given responsibilities. And it's for me to remember and to keep in mind that their best may be different from my best. Many will far exceed me, so I can't peak them because they've reached where I am. Maybe there's a whole lot more potential there, or maybe their best may be different from my best in something else at a lower level. And so I need to lower my expectation. But it's to help them develop to be their best. Now, what are some areas for staff development? And my primary intention here is to stimulate our thinking so that as you go to the discussion groups and as you think about this, it will help you to compile your list of things that you want to help your staff in, and to suggest some areas in which we need to be thinking here. You remember 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 to 7, where the apostle is speaking about the qualifications for the elders, the spiritual leaders. And in that passage, he brings into focus and reminds us that in our work and in the responsibility of a spiritual leader, not only a man's ministry capabilities, but also the quality of his personal life, the quality of his marriage and of his family, one who rules well his children, he speaks of. All these affect his effectiveness. So in our staff development, and for us, perhaps unlike a secular company who may only be interested in the man's professional proficiency, we have to be concerned about these areas of a man's life, his personal life, his family and marriage, and his ministry proficiency. First is life. What would we want to develop here? And dear, let me use four familiar words that we so often speak of in referring to our Lord out of Luke 2:52. The spiritual, the intellectual, the social, and the physical. In the spiritual realm, what would we aim to do? I think we should stimulate depth in Christ-likeness, depth in the Word, depth in prayer. One of the dangers that our staff face, especially those out in new responsibilities or who are ministering primarily to people younger than they are, is to coast spiritually. Reason is you're meeting with people in DFDs. You've done all of them. So there's no need for new preparation. You're working with people who are still in a new team in a TMS, and you've done all that. And you can get by with all the basic messages that you've already prepared. And there is that lack of stimulation, unless it comes from some other source, to get deeper in the Word, to go deeper in prayer, to be studying, and to grow in our character. Remember Acts 6:4, but we will give ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word. Encourage your staff to be people of prayer. One of the things I try to remember is that we're in a spiritual ministry. Our work is a spiritual business. And like Paul says, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. And we can't use carnal means. We must develop our work through prayer and in prayer. And we need to constantly remember that. Encourage our people to dig deep in the Word. I remember several years ago, and I don't know if Lauren still holds to this, but several years ago, Lauren had said that there are three books in the Bible he would like to see every NAV staff master. The Gospel of John, the Epistle to the Romans, and Ephesians. Three good books. Are our people mastering them? Help our people to learn what tools are available and what aids are available to dig deeper in the Word. Beyond the young SDS days when they were just doing the simple ABCs and SDS. But now as teachers of the Word, what things can help them? Some of our people go through this frustration. They reach that point and they feel like, I need to go to seminary. And it's really the expression of saying, I really don't know, you know, how to study. And it's not the fact of going to seminary, but how can I go deeper? A few years ago, Chef sent, I think he sent each of us, this book by Wilbur Smith, The Minister in His Study. The Presbyterian Journal some time ago had said, it will be a day well spent to hear Dr. Smith offer advice about helpful books for the use of pastors and generally give counsel of it out of his long and useful life. I'm sure his name is familiar to you. He's one of those guys who has about 25,000 volumes in his own personal library. And in this very easy-to-read book, and yet it's one of those books you'll go back to from time to time to see what he says about different books, he suggests, and he writes this primarily for pastors, but I think we can learn much from it, The Basic Books of a Pastor's Library. He also gives four suggestions for ministers who plan to give their lifetime to the study of the Word. He says, for instance, any minister who is about to begin a lifelong study of the Holy Scriptures and of the great literature that explores the profound themes of the Christian faith must make four preliminary basic decisions. And he goes and he tells you what those four are. The first one, he says, he must decide how much time he's going to give every day to the study of the Scriptures and the great books of the Christian faith. Well, he tells you some of these books. He talks about Bible dictionaries and about Bible atlases and all those kinds of things. And he speaks of contemporary authors also, but he stays very much with the classics. You'll find it very helpful. But it's a tool. Many of our staff don't know, you know, is this good? Or we have such a volume of material being published today. Intellectual. What can we do here? 1 Corinthians 14 says, brethren, do not be children in your thinking. Be babes in evil, but in thinking be mature. Stimulate our staff to develop their thinking. Encourage their reading to be conversant with the major issues of today, for instance. Some periodicals that would help this. When we were at Wheaton Grad School last summer for 2 weeks, our region went. One of the things we asked our church history professor would be, would you suggest for us, from what you know of us, some books other than the church history field? He had given us a list of what he thought were choice books in the church history field. But some other books that you think we ought to read. And he gave us a list of those. And that's one way to learn what to read. Among those he had suggested for us to keep up with contemporary theological issues was the current religious thought section of Christianity Today magazine. But he gave us a list of books. But that's one way to find out. Find the people who are in the know and the readers. One of the men that I have come around who have stimulated me in the area of reading is Bob Lewis. And I don't, you know, I'm amazed about how many books he reads between our, just in an RD meeting trip. Hey, you ought to talk with Bob, you know, and if you'd like to find out what are some books in a given field that you would suggest reading. Proverbs 13:20, he that walketh with wise men will be wise also. Well, how can you walk with the wise men? And one way is to walk with them in the books that they have written. One of the helpful things that I find, and I was very encouraged to note that Dr. Smith had recommended it, was to identify authors that you find reliable, and authors for me that minister to me, that I find I'd like to read anything they write. John Stott is one of these men that I have decided I'd like to put myself under his teaching. And one way for me to do it then is to get those things that John Stott writes and read them, study them, and learn from them. It's a whole lot cheaper than going to England and trying to find them, and even if I could, the likelihood of my sitting under his teaching would perhaps be very minimal. But one way I can do it is to find those books that IV publishes for him, and doing it will help our people to identify authors that are reliable, who minister to them, and that they can respond to, but intellectually, and then socially. I think in this, one of the things that we can concentrate on is to help our people to mature, to widen their circle of potential influence. To be able to relate to people other than the college students or the military person that he might be ministering to, but to pastors, to business people, to couples, but to widen their circle of influence. One of the things that, as I look back, was most significant in my development in this area, and we don't do it very much anymore. In fact, we don't do it on that large scale. And in our region, we have a team like this for 2 summers. We haven't done this recently. But the old development program idea. When you get that card and that name, you just don't know who's on the other end of that phone. And you get out there and you meet them. And he might be the president of a business. On the other hand, he might be just a poor old person, got on the TMS list some time ago in the New York Crusade or someplace, and to minister to a variety of people. And that's one way that we can do that. Provide guided experience for our staff where they have to do this. We don't have to make all the visits to pastors. They can do that. But to give them guidance, guided experience, not just experience, but guided experience. Bob mentioned the physical yesterday, and I think it's just the whole idea of helping our staff keep physically fit. I think it's Leroy who used to quote G. Christian Weiss, that anything we do for God, we do through a physical body. He'd say, therefore, keep that physical body well. But anything you do for God, it's got to be done through that body. The marriage and family is another area of in which we can direct our development. And here, I think Howie, in 1975, gave us 2 goals, to the continual development of marital intimacy. We can help our people, whether on a personal level or in seminars like that Howie gave us. I look back in those times. I look back in the times that George has ministered to us publicly, both through their teaching and the books that they have recommended. And Gloria and I have looked back and we thought, you know, we're very privileged. I think of my relatives, I think of my brothers, my sisters, my friends who have never been exposed to things like this. And we have benefited greatly. Well, things like that we can create, whether for the group or on an individual basis, to help them develop marital intimacy, or to fulfill, as how we call it, parental responsibility. One of the classics that I came across recently is Andrew Murray's book, How to Raise Your Children for Christ. Have you seen that? Very stimulating, easy to read. It's in 52 chapters. He takes 52 passages of the scripture on children, on raising children, so that if you read one a week, you'd be through the book in a year. And he has not only good insight in the scriptures, but gives very practical advice. Like one of the aims ought to be to help your children, develop your children to do good. And to do good habitually. But also that the ultimate goal is to help them to do good by choice. In the area of marriage and family, it's to develop our staff in the use of the home in the ministry. How to use that home in the ministry. And here's like so true. This is where Edith Schaeffer's thought is so relevant. We're novices, many of us, or having people in the home. I don't know how it is in your region or what you're noticing, but I wonder if we're throwing out the good idea that we used to have of having people live in the home. That with what we have learned because of some bad experiences and because of the great emphasis on marital intimacy, we have gone with a pendulum swinging to the other way, and we're so private now in our family life that we have no one live in our home anymore. And we have lost a very good idea. In the area of ministry, what are some areas that we could develop? Well, develop their thinking, their knowledge, their skill, their experience in three basic areas, I think. The basic area of the ministry. Bob talked about that yesterday. How to evaluate and plan and conduct a ministry. How to broaden that base of contact, or how to select, how to recruit people. How to train by man-to-man to multiply. In the Midwest, in the old Great Lakes region, and now in the Midwest, in the world we date things by A.D. and B.C. Well, in the Great Lakes region, which has now become the Midwest, we date things by before Monticello and after Monticello. Because Monticello, Indiana, was a place where Jack Ritter laid on us what he'd been observing. And we came and that we had to agree with him that the majority of us, if not all of us, didn't really know what we were doing in man-to-man. And we weren't really multiplying. Multiplying was more of a concept, an idea, but our man-to-man had nothing to do with our multiplying. And that summer, after that fall in Monticello, Jack got the entire staff together for a training program in Lansing, East Lansing, Michigan, which Bob Sheffield will never forget. And which every so often we stir him up. And we go back to those days because then we learned some things that have radically changed our ministry in the area of man-to-man. But we can't assume that because people get together on a man-to-man basis, that they really are doing the kind of things in man-to-man that will lead to a multiplying ministry. The use of teams in the ministry is another area that we could help them in the basic ministry. Or how about the use of conferences? Do you find your people reacting to having conferences? I hear that sometimes. In fact, I'm a little bit more concerned about how often I'm hearing it. Leroy told me, he says, when you find someone, a staff, who is hesitant or reserved about having conferences, you just remind them about the first conference they went to. I mentioned that to different staff, and you can just hear, oh, they remember. You see, for us, we think, oh no, we're going to preach the basics again. But we forget there's a whole new batch. Just about every conference I've been to recently, you ask for a show of hands for first-time attenders. And I think it's usually running a third to a half. Well, the basics are new to them. And they need the conference. And we need it for our ministry. to get those people. If you go back, as we've been listening to, the old Wingdings, people are today serving God because of the basic decisions they made back then. Of course, it's also another way for us to increase from an organizational point of view and for serving the rest of our ministry, to increase our base of contacts in the general public, people that we won't be ministering to personally. Some basic skills, another area in the ministry. Let me just mention some. Leadership. Are you familiar with a paper that Jack wrote several years ago, or maybe 10, 15 years ago? It's been one of the most helpful papers that I have come across and used. And rather than reading all those books on leadership, which is still helpful, but he's condensed and summarized principles, things like he was talking about the other night, four indicators of leadership. Public speaking, just whether that's preaching. I don't know if you're aware, but Bill Threlkeld, for instance, has a course, Ready to Serve Us, in helping our people in message preparation and delivery. And he's getting the equipment, the audiovisual equipment. He'd be glad to come to your area and help you and your staff, not only to teach them publicly, but to go through, to take the time and individually give instruction in this area. Or teaching. We do a lot of that. One of the best books I have ever I've come across that helped me is Mager's book on how to write instructional objectives. And I have found that after, if I can identify what my instructional objectives are, I can go from there. But a lot of my problems is when I don't know what it is I want to communicate. Mager's book. Counseling and guidance. Our staff do a lot of that. Christian Careers Planning Guide, I think, is a new book out, and I asked Bill Tell and Marilyn Ganico to try this book out. And they did it with a couple of their seniors and had tremendous response and help in the use of that book. But that's a tool. Our staff are the ones doing the first step of relating the majority of their people that won't continue on with the navigators. They need help and guidance. I think it's called Christian Careers Planning.
Christian Career Counseling.
Christian Career Counseling. And it's by Wright? Norm Wright, is it? Or?
I can't remember. By Moulton Press.
John Bradley.
Oh, John Bradley. Okay. Fundraising is another area of this skill. You know, and It depends how well we do here, and is one of the factors that affect how fat that envelope's going to be, that brown envelope downstairs. Well, we need to help our people here. Management of time, people, money. Conferences are good experiences, good opportunities to teach our people this whole thing of management of money, and teaching our people how to budget for that. And how to handle it wisely. And how to so manage it that with just wise planning, you can end up with a very helpful surplus for your areas. One of the things I find that's helpful to give our staff a vision for that is to help every staff, and that he knows he's gotten help from the conference surplus. And it gives him a little heart to learn how to manage those conferences well, so that there'll be surplus from which he can benefit in times of great need. Well, I'm sure you can add to some of these thoughts the useful tools that would help. But then some basic concepts, a third area in the ministry. The concept that we're a part of a global team. I'm not just a Christian missionary fellowshipping with the navigators and association with the navigators doing my own thing, but I'm a part of a global team. And what are the implications of that? The navigators have fundamentals of the ministry and the basic beliefs. We need to constantly go over that, especially in the world where there's so much being talked about in the area of making disciples. It's very easy for us to lose. Now, what is our vision? What is our aim? What's our contribution? I find that with our staff, we need to constantly go over our vision, our aim, our calling. What are some actions that we can take? On your outline, I suggested three basic actions. One is know your people. Plan for staff development. And thirdly, model continual personal development. Know your people. Know their strengths, their weaknesses. Know their gifts. Know their hopes and desires. To find out what's on their heart. What do they think they're strong in? What are some things that they would like to do? We can learn a lot here. And how would you come about this knowledge? Well, Bob talked yesterday about observation and evaluation is one way. And another way that Bob related to, made reference to, was learning from others. Other people who might know this person. I've inherited people that I don't know very well. It would take me years that I could cut very easily by just getting some time with Bob Sheffield or some others who know these people. Another way of knowing them is being willing to take the time to listen and to talk. And unhurried time to plan adequate time in those visits. I have found that that perhaps we get into some of our most meaningful conversation after the days running around seeing this DM over here and seeing this ministry over here and sitting down about 9 or 10 o'clock at night and talking into the wee hours of midnight when some real things really come out. You find out what's really on the person's heart and know them in times of prayer when God brings things to your mind. That's perhaps one of the best times. And what do we mean by planning for staff development? I think that it means that we need to plan on a personal basis for each staff. What does this staff need? Is there something that this staff needs that we need to do on a personal basis and make the necessary arrangements to help them in that area? Then plan on a statewide or regional level for staff development. In other words, that every year when you write your objectives, that this is one of the things that you think about, one of the areas in which you think about writing an objective. In what area are we going to work on developing our staff this year? Or what opportunities are we going to provide for staff development? Now, Bob started for us last year when he made arrangements for Wheaton. In their kindness, they have given us a special two-week grad course. We're repeating it this year. But they have let us arrange with them the courses that we feel would benefit us as navigator staff, rather than just any old course in the grad department. And that's not the idea, but it's taking those courses that would benefit us. Which leads me to this third thought of planning for staff development is to use the available opportunities and resources. Places like those or people like those, but bearing in mind that we need to dovetail it with what things will make us effective and that our aim is not just an increase of knowledge. We can use each other as resource and in fact using the staff themselves in their interaction, having one staff study something he's particularly interested in and having him share that with the group in those state meetings. Using the opportunities that conferences and training programs provide for the development of our staff, whether it's managing time or money or event. But one thing to remember in using opportunities like these is that delegation and responsibility does not necessarily produce development. As my old friend Larry keeps harping on, training must include instruction, observation, and evaluation. And it's not just a handing out that there you've got it, and I gave him all those responsibilities so he's developed in those areas. That's not the idea. But is there instruction, is their observation and is their evaluation. Encourage reasonable time for development so that your staff feels a liberty that in their personal schedule they can pursue this. And in this area of planning for development, another guideline is to watch your timing. Knowledge may be good, but knowledge at the right time is best. And you remember our Lord saying to the disciples, I have many things yet to say to you, but you're not able to bear them now. So there's a timing. So think through, between contact staff and area reps, what are the main things and the minimum things that we need to work on? And then focus on those. And then for an area rep on, what are some other things? But know your timing. And the last thought of some actions to take, as I said, is modeling continual personal development. Acts 20, not only take heed, but take heed to thyself. Take heed to yourself. Paul wrote to Timothy, and in closing of 1 Timothy 4, what he said to him was, take heed to yourself and to your teaching. Hold to that, for by so doing, you will save both yourself and your hearers. I think the discussion leaders have received the material, but I would like to see you just to emphasize the questions that we should major on.